Welcome to the Hunt the West podcast, where it's all about getting outside, experiencing the outdoors, and having epic adventures. At Hunt the West, my number one goal for you is to get out and hunt. So welcome back. It's episode 80. We haven't had an episode since September 27th, and it is currently February now. So yeah, it's been a minute. The last episode was with a first-generation bow hunter, Adam Buchanan. He has an awesome podcast, and we had a great episode. And that's been a really popular episode, so go make sure you listen to that one. And I want to give you guys an update on why I've been gone for so long. You know, some things have happened, the website and the podcast and things like that. But I want to also give you an update on the Hunt Expo. I was able to go to that. There's some really cool gear that I've been able to pick up. I want to give you some updates on that, maybe give you some ideas for things you could upgrade this year, and then talk a little bit about what I've been up to. And then the big news right now is the shed hunting closure in Utah that they just instituted, I believe on February 7th. So we'll talk about that and my thoughts on that. I'm sure a lot of you have been following that story closely. So I want to give you my thoughts. And yeah, that's kind of the rundown for what will be in this episode. So first, let's talk about, you know, give a little winter update. Since the last episode, back in October, my website got hacked, actually. Not really hacked, but they, like, my website was secure, but I was infiltrated by bots, I guess you could say. And I'm still dealing with the repercussions of that. So apparently there's this thing called card testing where a bot will use a small website like Hunt the West and purchase small ticket items, you know, like a $25 hat. And they use all these stolen credit card numbers to see which ones are still valid, which one works, and which ones don't. So I had literally tens of thousands of transactions coming through my site in just a couple of days. And 99% of them were stopped by the credit card companies. They resulted in failed transactions, but there were dozens and dozens that actually went through and worked. So I get notifications and emails of all the transactions that go through the website. So I caught it pretty quickly, but I still had like so many hits gone through. A bunch of hats had already been embroidered and were ready to ship, and they were going to be sent to a Red Lobster in Tennessee, of all places. And I knew something was up immediately just because the number of orders that were coming in so quickly, and they all were being put in by a very similar email address with just the numbers changing in it. The name of the person wasn't even a real name. It was like a bunch of numbers and stuff. So I knew it wasn't legit pretty much immediately. And so I looked up the address and it was a Red Lobster in Tennessee. So I luckily was able to contact the embroidery company and divert those shipments and make sure that they didn't get sent, you know, dropped off at a restaurant. And so I diverted those to my house, and then everything just kept still coming in. And so I took all the merch off the website so they couldn't order anything anymore. And to add all of this, at the time I was on vacation in Florida. So that was fun. I did get a few calls from random people who'd been charged, you know, by my company and were wondering what was going on. And I had to be the one to tell them that their credit card had been stolen, that I'd issue them a refund, but they need to cancel their credit card because it was being used by somebody using a bot in Lithuania. So anyway, that was fun. Luckily, this is a small business. I was able to catch it early. I didn't lose too much money on the extra embroidery costs. But you know, I have a stack of hats in my office. So come hit me up if you want to get one. I'll give you a discount. I did lose access to my Stripe account, though. It's still on hold for the time being because I still haven't fixed my website to make it, you know, so it's not vulnerable to these attacks by bots. So I need to put on like a reCAPTCHA or something like that. But this was a good opportunity for me to switch my website over from one host to another because I wasn't very pleased with my website host. Anyway, it's a whole other thing. But in the meantime, I want to change my website over to a more secure host and then add the reCAPTCHA and all that stuff so that this doesn't happen again. But on a brighter note, I was able to help the end of last season in November. I was able to help Ross fill his archery tag on the very last day. That story will be coming soon. We'll get Ross on the podcast and we'll talk about that because it was a really fun and very good learning experience and a really fun hunt. So on other brighter news, I have my basement is finished. Some of you might have known that I've been trying to finish my office, you know, finish my basement and get an office in working order because I recently switched to working from home. So that has mostly been finished. The basement's pretty much done. And so that's the update on that. And so because of all of that, that was some of the reasons why I have not been uploading. Also, just during the winter, during the holidays, there's just not as much hunting content. So I kind of take a step back from it, spend time with the family. Other things become a higher priority for me. And then once Hunt Expo season rolls around, then I start getting excited about it again. Application season, all that fun stuff is starting to ramp up. So now I have more things to talk about. So I do want to talk about the Hunt Expo. One of the biggest things that stood out to me was the Exo Mountain Gear K4 pack. They just came out with a new model. So I've been running the K3 and they haven't upgraded that for, I think, since like 2018 or 2019. It's been a few years. And before that, it was like 2017. They only had a couple renditions of the pack. K3 was awesome. There were just a couple little things that I wasn't super fond of, but they seem to have fixed all of those things and added way more features into the K4. Things that I didn't even think that I would have wanted, but I realized once I saw the new design, I was like, oh, actually that is way better. So for example, the way that the straps come across, the compression straps, they go kind of through that bungee pouch on the side that is like for a water bottle or something like that. And I didn't really ever have use for that bungee pocket because on mine, it was a little bit small because I have the born and raised version. And then, so I mostly just used it for the feet of my tripod going in there and then strapping it to the side. But then you'd kind of lose access to that pocket. So now what they've done is they have a strap that goes kind of through that pocket. So you still have access to the bungee without the bungee pocket without having to undo that strap. So that's a really nice improvement. They also added a MOLLE system on the hip belt, which allows you to attach things more securely. So the hip belt pouches that they have, the accessories, were before they were Velcro. And they were really secure, but sometimes, you know, one-handed operation wasn't as smooth. And the new pockets, the new hip belt attachments are just super solid now, which is really really nice. So it might be appealing enough for me to sell my old pack and get a new one because K4 looks awesome. So the other thing that I end up picking up at the Hunt Expo was a new bino harness, which is the Marsupial Gear bino harness. It's pretty trendy these days. Most people are switching over to that, it seems. And I really like the way that it opens. It's a magnetic open and it opens away from you. Mine currently flips up and you kind of hits you in the face. So I always had my eye on this bino harness when it first came out. And my brother has one and I knew that I was probably going to end up getting one. And because of that, I bought the rangefinder pouch. When I was in the market for a rangefinder pouch, I got the Marsupial Gear one because I knew it would work well with my future bino harness. And even though that was like 2 years ago, I knew that I would end up getting this. And so I finally did, and I got it at the Hunt Expo. And I also got the buckle delete kit. So if you are looking into getting a new bino harness, really like the Marsupial Gear one. Obviously, I haven't used it at all, basically, now out in the field. But I've been really impressed with it. And then they also sell this buckle delete kit. So what it does is just cuts down on the profile. So right now the stock version of it is a normal buckle, like a male and a female that just clip into one another, but they're beefy buckles. And so it can kind of take up a little bit more space. The buckle delete kit allows you to get a little bit higher on your chest, which I prefer. And it also it just makes it a little bit smaller. There are fewer pressure points, things like that. So, and it's just a few bucks for the buckle delete kit. And it's really easy to do. They have a great video on their website, how to get the buckles off. Because you have to cut the old buckles off. It doesn't ruin them. You can still reuse them if you want to switch back. You're essentially turning those buckles into a replacement buckle and then a smaller one goes in its place. So anyway, I did that and it's really awesome. So The other thing that I've recently picked up was a Peaks headlamp. So I know that there was a lot of buzz around this headlamp when it first came out, and it's 1,000 lumens, has a really bright red light on it. And I've been in the market for a new headlamp because the one that I currently have, it was working great, but the battery life on it was not very good. And I use my headlamp all the time because I trail run. I use it for trail running just about every day. So I was changing out batteries, you know, 3 AAAs, like every few days, like at least once a week, I was changing them out because the headlamp would just go dim after 3 or 4 hours. So I was in the market for a new one with a bigger battery that was rechargeable, so I didn't spend so much money on batteries. And there were two that I was kind of looking at. Ended up going with the Peaks headlamp because that one has the red light, which is just so bright. It's not the most ideal for trail running. There was another one that is like more specific for trail running, and that's what I use it for the most often, but I ended up getting a pretty good deal on the Peaks headlamp, and so I ended up getting that one, and I've been really happy with it so far. I've been running with it for a little over a week now, and I charged it all the way full, and I wanted to see how many hours it would take if I left it on the highest setting in real circumstances, you know, running outside for an hour or two and then turning it off, letting it sit, you know, running in the cold. I wanted to see how it performed. And I'm not sure for sure how many hours exactly, but I think it was around 8 or 9 hours on full blast, like the highest beam setting, before it turned off and ran out of batteries. So 9 hours at the highest brightness is really great. And that's going to be good enough for most hunts, the entire hunt, I would imagine. Especially if you're not, you don't need to run it on full blast like I do. When you're trail running, I like to be able to see a lot more just to know what's coming on the trail. You're moving a little faster, but when I'm hiking, I would imagine I'd have it on low or medium most of the time. And so I've been really happy with that Peaks headlamp. And obviously I'm going to link all this stuff that I talk about in the description. I'm not sponsored by any of these companies or anything. This is just what I have been making my decisions as far as gear goes. And then the other thing I picked up over the winter was a Black Ovis tripod. I believe it's called the Alpine Pro, and the pan head that goes with that. So before, I was running a Primo's trigger stick, which is great for shooting a rifle off of. And it's nice because it has a trigger and you can just like quickly adjust that height. The problem with it is it's really heavy and it doesn't go down very compact. So it's really tall, even at its most compact setting. And that's a problem because it kind of pokes out. It's about the same height as my pack when it's completely collapsed. So that was a problem just because I didn't like how big it was and it was heavy. And so it would kind of take up a lot of space on my pack. Anyway, I ended up getting the Black Ovis version, and I did the math on the weight savings. And if you include the pan head and everything, I shaved over a pound off of my previous setup and a ton of space. So I'm pretty excited about that space savings and the weight savings. I think that's going to be a lot better setup. The cons to that are that, you know, it's not quite as easy, not as quick to change, adjust the level of it. But the way that I, you know, justify that is because it has a center post that is adjustable. So you can get the leg set nice, and then you can switch like up and down. Because when you're glassing uphill, it's a lot easier if your tripod is up higher. And when you're glassing downhill, it's easier if your tripod is lower. And I like to, you know, you're obviously switching between uphill and downhill glassing pretty frequently. So being able to adjust that center post, you know, just with one little twist and a slide and twisting it back tight is going to be pretty easy and well worth the weight savings and the space savings. So yeah, that's what I've been up to these last couple months. I've been running a lot. If you follow me, my personal account on Instagram, that's pretty much all I ever post about is like running, because that's when I'm out in nature. That's what I enjoy doing. And I have a couple of races coming up. I've got my first ultra marathon. It's the Red Mountain 55K, which is about 34 miles. That's in St. George in March. And, you know, it's just coming up in a couple of weeks. And then I went out on a limb and I decided to sign up for the DC Peaks 50 miler in October. So that'll be by far the longest I've ever run in a single day. I've barely even done 50 mile weeks. So the DC Peaks, that one I'm a little nervous about because it's over 12,000 feet of elevation gained, and it's 50 miles. It's a long, long race. But it's right here close to my hometown. It hits all the peaks in Davis County along the Wasatch Mountains. So they're trails that I know pretty well, and I've been staring at them and running portions of them this whole time. So I'm excited for that. But I do want to mention, like, I think trail running translates to hunting really, really well, which is why it's been one of the activities that I choose to do, especially during the winter there when there's not much to do. I have learned a ton about nutrition, about endurance, just pain management. And the biggest thing I've learned about that translates to hunting is just mental toughness, like being able to be in uncomfortable situations for a long period of time and knowing where you can push yourself. And trail running just does that for me. And so I've been really, really enjoying it. So I'm thinking about doing some sort of an event. I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast or not, but so I kind of want to do some kind of event this spring, like a trail run or a ruck or something, something like that. So if you're interested in that sort of thing, be on the lookout for that. We might do like a 3 or 6 mile ruck or run. And maybe we'll throw some archery in there. I don't know. I haven't decided yet, but I would like to get some of the listeners of the podcast together and do something around here. So if you live around, you know, northern, like Salt Lake, Davis County, somewhere in there, let me know. And if you're interested in that sort of thing, you might be able to influence what we end up doing. So if you want to do a trail run or a ruck, you know, something like that, I think it would be a lot of fun. So let's talk about this shed hunting closure. This is the buzz of social media and most people in Utah right now, I think, because it's kind of a rare thing. We'll get into the history on shed closures a little bit, but the DWR announced that they will be closing shed hunting until April 30th, effective immediately, essentially like February 1st to April 30th. So there are those who are for it, those who are against it. And as usual, I think the best solution is probably somewhere in the middle. And there is some nuance that I want to talk about. But to explain the basic premise, they closed shed hunting because it's been a really tough year and they want to protect those vulnerable animals from being pushed around unnecessarily. So we've had the most snowfall this year that honestly I can remember living my whole life on the Wasatch Front. It's definitely the most snowfall and the coldest winter in my adult life. I didn't really follow shed hunting or hunting in general until about 10 years ago. But I know that they haven't shut down shed hunting since 2017. So it's been a few years, but it's not unheard of. So anyway, it's a pretty rare thing in Utah. I know Nevada, on the other hand, I don't think they allow shed hunting at all any year, regardless of how tough or easy the winter was, until May 1st. So that idea itself is not unheard of, but it's just not very typical to close shed hunting in Utah. So obviously, people who shed hunt are pretty upset about it. And here's the thing. So on a normal year, there's a course that you have to do every year in Utah that educates you on understanding wildlife harassment and how you shouldn't bump deer around in the winter. And they're still blocking off shed hunting, even if, you know, notwithstanding their a course being around like wildlife harassment. So, you know, for me personally, I like shed hunting. I'm not anywhere near someone who you would call a shed hunter. I don't go very often. I don't even really ever target shed hunting when I go out, but I do like finding them and I keep them when I find them. So I think the main part, the main point of contention from those who oppose the shed hunting ban is that it doesn't prohibit any other activity that could harass wildlife and cause the same damage that a shed hunter would theoretically be doing during a tough winter, which, you know, that makes sense. I understand their sentiment there. For example, there was a cow elk hunt that just ended the last day of January. There's a turkey hunt in April. There's a bear hunt in April. I'm pretty sure there are some mountain lion running, like you're allowed to run mountain lions with dogs. I'm not sure on the seasons on that, but you know, snowshoeing, backcountry skiing, snowmobiling, none of those things are being limited. And all those things that I've just mentioned are all off-trail activities. And what most people tend to mention as far as like, oh, you don't close these things off, they typically mention like trail running, hikers, bikers, bunch of other stuff that happens on winter range. But I think it is worth mentioning that there's a difference between an on-trail and an off-trail activity. Because I've seen it personally as someone who trail runs a lot. I know of a particular pocket there are a bunch of deer that are wintering right now. And I used to see the deer there literally every single morning. You could count on like 20, 30, 40 deer in this pocket, depending on the day. Back in December, when things started getting pretty gnarly as far as wintering deer, I stopped running over there because I was always bumping them. But that being said, whenever I do bump them, I'm always just right on the trail. You know, they don't spook much from the trail. They aren't spending a ton of energy getting away because they're used to being pushed around by people in that area. And they just go up the hill 50-100 yards. They just watch you run by. So I think that's probably the case everywhere. The deer and the elk that live near common trails, those are not the ones that are dying from overexertion and loss of fat stores. I think it's the ones that are farther back. Although I'm sure there's a percentage of those that are going to die regardless of being bumped by a human or not. I just wanted to point out that there is a difference between on-trail and off-trail activities. So when people start bagging on other activities that aren't banned, I don't fully buy into the argument that every activity should be banned, although it is a good point that, you know, like there's a turkey hunt. If you're turkey hunting and you come across a shed, like you literally are not allowed to pick it up because that activity is banned, even though you're already standing next to it. I mean, it's pretty absurd if you use that specific case. And the same goes for bear hunting. Bear hunts open on April 1st, I think. So for a month, there are bear hunters in the woods off trail pursuing game animals, but you're not allowed to pick up sheds. So why didn't they shut down the bear hunt? Why didn't they shut down the turkey hunt? I'm pretty sure the DWR has the ability to do those things, but those things bring in money. Shed hunting doesn't. I think there might be a valid point and some fair questions being asked about if this is really about protecting vulnerable animals from harassment, you know, or being bumped too much. Is this the most effective way to do that? And should we be doing more? Should we be shutting down other things? Shed hunting included. But it looks a lot like cherry picking when you only shut down shed hunting, which I don't know the numbers on it, but it seems like a relatively small category of people. And if you leave the rest of the activities completely untouched, I don't think it's going to really do anything. So you have kind of two camps of people that I think are, I don't know, in some sense, they're both kind of ridiculous. Those who are bagging on, you know, like the content creators saying, oh, what are you going to do for content now? And laughing at them, or saying like, how can you be against the shed hunt? Like, don't you care about protecting the herds? And I think a very logical response is banning shed hunting is not going to help the herds in any measurable way. And I think that's true. So, and then on the other hand, you have the people saying, you know, like, why would you ban shed hunting? You should ban everything. And then you're getting into like, this would probably take an act of Congress, you know, like you can't ban all these things. You know, I don't know how that all works. I'm not a lawyer or anything, but I'm pretty sure that's never going to happen. Like, you're not going to ban snowmobiling. I don't know. And then there's the idea of like just closing off winter range. And then, you know, there's, it just gets really messy because there's so many things that happen on public land and regulating public versus private. And it even said in the press release that the DWR put out that you're not allowed to gather shed antlers on private land. So I don't know how they go about enforcing that. I mean, that seems like basically impossible to enforce, but whatever. I guess you can ban shed hunting on private land too, but I don't think it's going to do a single measurable thing to protect the wildlife. And here is the statement from the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources director, Jay Shirley. Not sure if that is a man or a woman, but they said, in these types of conditions, big game animals are weakened and highly vulnerable to repeated human-caused disturbances. The unnecessary expenditure of energy and stress associated with disturbance, like being repeatedly followed by someone gathering shed antlers, may significantly decrease the survival rates of big game animals, particularly deer, this winter. Closing the shed antler and horn gathering season will minimize a major source of disturbance in the areas and during the time periods when big game animals are the most exposed and vulnerable. Shed antler gathering is not the only winter activity with the potential to disturb wintering wildlife. We encourage everyone to be aware of wildlife during this vulnerable period and do their best not to disturb them. So I don't get how in the same breath you can say there's lots of activities that, you know, can disturb wildlife, but we're only going to stop shed hunting. And I just don't see how that is the logical response. I don't think that it's going to have any measurable impact. And maybe I'm wrong on that. Like, maybe if you work for the Division of Wildlife and you know, or you can somehow measure how many shed hunters are bumping deer, what the typical, you know, problems are, and how many people are doing it. I want to see some data on this because, and you know, obviously that's never going to happen. Like I just don't see why not ban all the other activities too, or at least, you know, have some kind of statement on why or how they're not doing all the measures to protect wildlife. Because if it's really about protecting the wildlife, you'd think that they would ban everything that could potentially harass wildlife. So I don't know. And then it goes on and says that the last time shed hunting was prohibited was in 2017, and they're going to be conducting additional patrols this winter to enforce the antler gathering restrictions. And to ensure that people aren't intentionally disturbing wintering wildlife, violators may be cited. So anyway, I don't know. Maybe I honestly, I'm sort of in favor of it. I just don't think that it's really going to do anything based on the number of activities that they're limiting. And also, I'm not really a shed hunter, so I don't really have a dog in this fight. I think that the winter is going to affect the deer a lot, no matter what activities we limit. I mean, it would take a very concerted effort and a united effort to just completely remove the human footprint in the winter range. We've already encroached so much on the wildlife winter range. I mean, houses are built up right up to the foothills, even higher. We're seeing more and more subdivisions going in where deer used to winter. And, you know, I honestly care about humans more than people. I mean, humans more than wildlife. I think that people need to have a place to live. I also think that you need to have places that are protected that wildlife can survive too. So anyway, I think there's a little bit more nuance than what people are talking about on social media. I don't think it's as simple as are you for the ban or are you not? So anyway, those are just my thoughts. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Hit me up on social media, tag me and stuff, whatever, at huntthewest.us or at skylar.harrison. Yeah, well, I'd be happy to talk to anybody about this kind of stuff. And if you have more intel on, you know, shed antler gathering and data on how it's affecting the deer, I'd love to see that too. So send me that stuff if it exists. So anyway, next season, I'm hoping that I draw an archery mule deer tag. I'm going to buy an over-the-counter elk tag. And I'm hoping that this is the year to get an elk, my very first elk with a bow. So I'm hoping to do some recon in some new areas for deer this year. I mean, it's going to be really interesting this spring to see how much snow, like we've gotten so much snow this year. It's been a terrible year for the deer and elk as far as winter conditions. So I'm excited to see what spring holds if the snowfall continues, if we have a wet spring like we did last year, a wet early summer. That could be really good for the deer and elk going into the hunts. So yeah, I'm really excited. But yeah, I think there's a lot to look forward to and a lot going on this winter is just gonna be interesting. So I don't know if it's what it's like in the rest of the West, you know, Idaho, Montana, Colorado. I'm sure it's pretty similar, but yeah, let me know what you guys are seeing in your areas. Is there a lot more snow than usual? Are you seeing deer and elk being pushed into areas that they normally wouldn't have been? I know this year there was a herd of elk in Salt Lake City, which has never happened in my life that I know of. You never see elk pushed down this far, but they're just that desperate for food. So yeah, in that sense, I want to protect the animals too. I just would like to actually do something that matters and not something that just seems to target one segment of the population that doesn't bring in any money for the DWR. And I'm sure there's more to the story than that. And again, we're back to the shed hunting thing, but I think there's probably more to the story than that. I think it's probably, I might be being a little bit simplistic in saying that shed hunting doesn't bring in money and the other stuff does. So let's shut down shed hunting and say that we're doing something for the wildlife. And, you know, there, I'm sure that has something to do with it, but probably not everything. I just don't know what else is going through their minds or who's making these decisions. So anyway, I'm going to stop rambling. Thanks for tuning in today. I hope that you are gearing up for a good season. Let me know what gear things you're changing this year. If you have questions about my gear setup, I think my page is still up, huntthewest.us/gear. I'm going to be redoing the website here over the next couple months, and I hope to have a few more episodes coming out pretty soon. So thanks for tuning in. Now get out there and hunt the West.